I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. The Israeli military says it has begun a limited, localized operation against Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon. It said it was carrying out targeted ground raids in villages close to the Israeli border. The targets, it said, pose an immediate threat to Israeli communities in northern Israel. It announced early Tuesday the operation has been planned in recent months and was launched after approval by political leaders. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman has more from Jerusalem.
After killing the leader of Hezbollah in a dramatic airstrike, Israel is stepping up the pressure on the Lebanese militant group. Israel, over the past 2 weeks or so, has killed virtually all of Hezbollah's top leaders. That was capped by this massive airstrike over the weekend that killed Hassan Nasrallah, the man who has led Hezbollah for the past three decades. This is also raising questions about whether Israel might be on a collision course with Hezbollah's main sponsor, Iran. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu sent a videotaped message to the people of Iran. He says his dispute is with the government, not the people, but he is warning them that Israel has the ability to strike its enemies no matter where they are.
AP correspondent Joe Fetterman. A new report has found nearly 6,000 people in Haiti are starving, with nearly half the country's population of more than 11 million people experiencing crisis levels of hunger or worse as gang violence smothers life in the capital of Port-au-Prince and beyond. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification Report released Monday also found the number of Haitians facing crisis, emergency, and famine levels of hunger increased by 1.2 million in the past year as gang violence disrupts transportation of goods and prevents people from venturing out of their homes to buy food. This is VOA News. The death toll from Hurricane Helene surpassed 100 on Monday, days after the storm tore through the southeastern United States, and the White House said the number of storm-related deaths could go much higher. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
Here's U.S. Homeland Security Advisor Liz Sherwood Randall.
The current data we have is that it looks like there could be as many as 600 lost lives. But we don't have any confirmation of that. We know there are 600 who are either lost or unaccounted for.
Footage from the unincorporated communities of Bat Cave and Mill Spring, North Carolina, showed the extent of some of the damage, with homes, roads, and bridges decimated.
We're not leaving until the job is done.
U.S. President Joe Biden said he will soon travel to the South for a firsthand look at the devastation and pledged full support to the affected
areas. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. New York City Mayor Eric Adams has launched a legal attack on the federal corruption case against him. His attorney asked a judge Monday to toss out bribery charges and then held a combative news conference accusing prosecutors of ethical lapses. The Democratic mayor has pleaded not guilty to accepting lavish travel benefits and illegal campaign contributions from a Turkish official and other foreign nationals in exchange for favors like pushing through the opening of a consulate building. The mayor's attorneys say the cheap flights to overseas destinations, seat upgrades, free meals, and free hotel rooms he got were not bribes as defined by federal law. Basketball Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo has died at age 58 from brain cancer. The towering 2.2-meter African was a popular defensive player and international advocate. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
He could score, but in his playing days, Dikembe Mutombo made a name for himself with his defensive prowess.
Mountain miles.
Shot-blocking ability enhanced by his 7-foot-2 height and celebrated in a Geico insurance ad.
Happier than Dikembe Mutombo blocking a shot.
Coming out of Georgetown, Mutombo spent 18 seasons in the NBA, playing for Denver, Atlanta, Houston, Philadelphia, New York, and the then New Jersey Nets. An 8-time All-Star, 4-time Defensive Player of the Year, and 3-time All-NBA selection. Inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2015.
I'm fortunate and blessed.
But off the court, Mutombo made a mark with his humanitarian work. His foundation focuses on health, education, and quality of life in his home country, the Congo. I'm Ben Thomas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's parliament meets today to consider impeaching Deputy President Gachagua.
The Deputy President Gachagua is accused of being behind the recent protests in the country, the protests that led to torching and burning a section of parliament.
Tanzanian President Samia Hassan rejects allegations that she might have played a role in the recent political killings and abductions. Lake Victoria countries work to fight crime and improve community relations. Churches in Sudan open their doors to displaced people. The sports world, especially fans in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Africa, remember the late basketball great Dikembe Mutombo.
He was a huge talent, a huge person, a tall person, but he was tall on, I may say, on everything. Good person, good heart, ready to help, ready to advise, to support. We just miss a great champion right there.
And U.S. Vice Presidential candidates J.D. Vance and Kim Walz prepare for Tuesday night debate. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A major development is likely to take place in Kenya's parliament today, Tuesday, where a motion to impeach Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua is expected to be introduced. The reasons for the impeachment are not yet officially known, but political reporter Barack Odua of the People's Daily says Gachagua is accused of being behind the recent anti-tax protest and of using his office to abet corruption. The deputy president has described the allegations as unjustified. Reporter Odua tells me the impeachment may also have something to do with Kenya's 2027 presidential election.
We expect a big happening in Kenyan parliament because the motion to impeach the deputy president of Kenya, Mr. Rigathi Gachagua, is going to be tabled in Kenyan parliament. The Kenyan constitution provides for the process to remove or impeach the deputy president. In Kenya, we have the National Assembly and the Senate. So they have power to impeach the deputy president.
What is the biggest criticism that President Ruto or his supporters have against the deputy president Gachagua, for which he's going to be impeached?
The deputy president Gachagua is accused of being behind the recent protests in the country, the protests that led to torching and burning a section of parliament. So Mr. Gachagua first is accused of being behind this protest. He and a section of members of parliament who are allied to him are accused of funding this protest. That is one. The second one is that Mr. Gachagua is accused of using his office to abet corruption by awarding himself or influencing awarding of tenders worth billions to his own advantage. Thirdly, he's accused of disrespecting the president. For the last 2-3 days, Mr. Gachagua has been imploring the president to have members of parliament allied to the ruling coalition, United Democratic Alliance, and the opposition, Orange Democratic Movement, to ensure that he's not impeached because the president controls numbers in parliament. And should the impeachment motion be tabled in parliament, automatically it's going to be impeached.
Now, this friction between President Ruto and his deputy, to what degree does it have to do with the elections coming up in 2027?
Thank you very much. This particular impeachment debate has a lot to do with Kenyan election in 2027. One, first of all, because the Kenyan constitution ensures that a president and his running mate are elected under one ticket. But the constitution provides for the impeachment of a president separately and the deputy separately. And that is what the president is pushing for. Impeachment of Mr. Gachagua. When it comes to 2027 election, is that Mr. Gachagua comes from one of the most popular ethnic communities in Kenya. It's called the Kikuyu community that voted overwhelmingly for the president. But it seems Mr. Ruto has gotten new friends. Mr. Ruto is now working with the veteran opposition leader, Raila Odinga. Raila Odinga comes from western part of Kenya, from a community called the Luo. So for the last few months, the president seems to be focusing his attention to work with Mr. Odinga in 2027. And there's a talk that Gachagua's replacement, although it might still come from his own ethnic Kikuyu community, Mr. Ruto is looking to work with Mr. Odinga, who has strained his eyes in the African Union chairmanship seat.
Barack Udwa is the political reporter for the People's Daily of Kenya. He was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan has rejected allegations that she might have played a role in the recent political killings and abductions in the country. She said she has never killed anyone. The Tanzanian citizen reports that the president issued a denial over the weekend while addressing the general meeting of the women's wing of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi or CCM party. The country has been experiencing abductions and killings, including last month's kidnapping and murder of Mohamed Ali Kibayo, the opposition Chadema party. Meanwhile, Chadema women members held their own news conference to highlight the killings and enforce disappearances of some in their party. Brenda Chadema is one of the leaders of the opposition party.
The purpose of our news conference was we wanted to show our president, President Samia Suluhu Hassan, that the women, not only of Tanzania, but the women of Chadema, we are angry with her. We want her to feel our anger and to know that we are not happy with her whereabouts and what she's doing to the country. With this, I'm talking in regards to the abductions that are going on, the killings, the kidnappings that are going on. We are definitely not happy, and we wanted to show that to our president.
As you know, President Samia Suluhu Hassan has denied involvement in any killings. In fact, she said that she has never killed anyone before.
Okay, I listened to her statement and her speech when she said she has never killed anybody. But we are not saying that she killed personally or directly. We are saying the people that are doing this are under her directly. These are people that work for the police forces. Now, she's the commander-in-chief of all security organs in Tanzania. So if I'm working for you and I'm killing in my work of duty, there is no way you can come and say that you don't know anything about it or you have nothing to do about it, because I work for you. So in this, we really are holding her accountable, and we really need her to give us answers, and we are pleading with her as Chadema women, but not only as Chadema women, as citizens of Tanzania, we are pleading with her to come out and give statements that are clear, not saying that I didn't kill anybody directly. No, that is not a presidential statement. She's supposed to have compassion for all the families that are suffering, for all the families that are losing their loved ones.
The president has also ordered an investigation into the abduction and murder of Ali Kibayo. What does Chadema want to see happen?
Empower a foreign investigation committee to come and do the investigation for them, because they're not doing it. What we need is answers and not simple words. We as Chadema, we want people to be held accountable. We want accountability. Starting from the president, we want the Minister of Internal Affairs to be held accountable. And we also want the IGP to also be held accountable. People cannot go missing in your country. They cannot be abducted, killings every other day. And then as the president, nobody is being held accountable. We want people to be held accountable. If they are not fired, let them leave their positions with immediate effect by themselves. But we cannot go on like this. This is a country, and we are all Tanzanians.
Brenda Chadema is one of the leaders of Tanzania Chadema Party. She was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Officials from East African countries are meeting in Kenya to discuss ways of fighting transnational and organized crime around Lake Victoria. The representative from Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda want to strengthen port border management to stop unauthorized fishing, illegal tree cutting, human trafficking, and other illegal activities. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The security and regional integration officials are meeting for the fourth time in less than 2 years to find ways to more effectively fight transnational crimes around the Lake Victoria area shared by the three countries. Some of the crimes are nature-related, like illegal fishing, tree cutting, and charcoal production. In others, criminals take advantage of porous borders to sell drugs and conduct human trafficking. In 2021, the police organization Interpol rescued 121 people trafficked in and around Lake Victoria. Speaking to reporters at the port city of Mombasa, Kenya's Interior Ministry Principal Secretary Raymond Omolo said the parties are looking to close gaps in policing and surveillance, while also improving social and economic relations of communities living in the lake region.
So we are looking at how to coordinate better, how to build capacities, how to have a common understanding with the communities around the lake and also who benefit from the use of the lake, on how to better manage those resources while at the same time trying to minimize or eradicate crime that we know is common in the lake.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, launched the Lake Victoria Project in December 2022. The world's second largest freshwater lake covers 60,000 square kilometers and is a source of livelihood for at least 40 million people in East Africa. Uganda's Assistant Commissioner for Migration, Marcelino Besigye, told the conference attendees that keeping Lake Victoria safe and secure is important for his country.
Lake Victoria is Uganda's ocean, so we are looking forward to working together, especially to learn about the good practices that you have maybe from the coast, this one of Mombasa, to take back.
Authorities have documented illegal fishing in the lake, driven by rising demand of Nile perch, as well as charcoal harvesting and timber smuggling. Sharon Dimash is IOM Kenya's chief of mission. She says authorities need to partner with communities to fight organized crime in the region.
If the border communities are not informed, if they really don't know what are the red flags, what do we need to focus on, then it becomes a bit challenging to combat any of these transnational organized crimes, because they are there and they know what is happening and they know some strange faces that are coming in their communities. So it's very important that we link them up. They have a good relationship with law enforcement agencies.
The meeting in Mombasa ends Wednesday. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 1st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Port Sudan, which has been spared from the fighting in Sudan's civil war, churches have become makeshift shelters for many of the country's 11 million displaced residents. In this report, Henry Wilkins visits one such church where a religious leader who is a displaced person himself does what he can do to help with little support from the international community.
When Sudan's civil war started in April last year, those fleeing the fighting began arriving in the city of Port Sudan. The Church of the Virgin Mary opened its doors to the new arrivals. Basada Bushra Gorgeous is one of the priests at the church.
Our role as clergymen is to help others find housing, food, and water. We give psychological counseling and physical treatment as well. We try to find safe places for them to stay, whether here or outside Port Sudan.
Those who cannot afford to flee the country remain at the church, he says. According to UN figures, almost 11 million are now displaced as a result of Sudan's war. In Port Sudan and its surrounding region, 36,000 are forced to live in public buildings such as churches. Anna Simon Aziz Sadek arrived at the church 2 months ago with her young daughter. She says they were threatened and robbed by members of the paramilitary rapid support forces on their journey here, and that her daughter is traumatized as a result.
When we were coming here, the RSF were stopping cars. They pulled us out of our car and took our belongings. So she's still terrified after she witnessed the gunfire. Now, if she sees a group of strangers, she feels scared.
She says the church was a welcome respite.
Here, we found safety. The church welcomed us and asked us what we needed. We were tired when we came here, but they helped us.
Like Sadek, Gorgeous also found safety in Port Sudan. He was displaced after the church he worked at in another city was attacked by unidentified gunmen. He says the clergymen were deliberately targeted. The attackers knew their names, shot one person in the leg, and looted the building. When he arrived in Port Sudan in October 2023, the trauma weighed heavily on him, he says, but that drove him to help others with similar experiences.
As clergymen, it is a God-given duty and responsibility to serve others, even if we sacrifice our life to do it.
He says the church gets little assistance from the international community. The United Nations has complained about a 50% funding shortfall for Sudan's humanitarian crisis and restricted humanitarian access from the government, exacerbating the plight of Sudan's displaced. On September 25th, the U.S. announced it would send a further $424 million in aid to the country. And we walk into VOA News, Port Sudan, Sudan.
That sports world, especially fans in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Africa, are remembering basketball great Dikembe Mutombo, who passed away Monday at the age of 58. According to the National Basketball Association, the NBA, Dikembe played for several teams. He was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in 2015. He was also an 8-time NBA All-Star and won the league's Defensive Player of the Year award for four times. Abraham Luakabwanga is the National Secretary of the ruling UDPS in DRC, in charge of communication. He tells me Congolese have lost a national sports hero and a humanitarian.
You know, it's a sad news. I knew him as a fighter since he has been discovered with a brain tumor. He was, you know, trying to do his best fighting his tumor. We had expectation that, you know, he could come out being healed from that, but unfortunately, we got the news this afternoon. He was a huge talent, a huge person, a tall person, but he was tall on, I may say, on everything. Good person, good heart, ready to help, ready to advise, to support. We just miss a great champion right there.
As you said, he was a good person on and off the basketball court. We understand he was involved in a lot of things in the Democratic Republic of Congo, not just basketball. What can you tell us about some of the things he was doing?
Yeah, a couple years ago, he built up a huge clinic, an hospital in Kinshasa. It's located in a suburban place. Hospital was so well equipped and in an environment where, I may say, low-income people used to stay. So this was a huge support for the population that was starving to get access to good medicine support. But besides that, he helped a lot through his foundation. He just built another facility, a school, this one education, for more than 1,000 kids in Kasai, where his father was born. They, you know, left us with a tremendous souvenir because he was ready to help, ready to put his hand in his pocket and come out with the support that we were looking for. And like I said, it's a huge mess, and I hope that his family, brothers and sisters could, you know, support this this moment. We knew that he was sick, but, you know, nobody was thinking that he was going, you know, to pass away that quick. But once again, I praise God for what he did. I have a very good memory. It was really a nice person, and I hope the Lord will welcome him and give him a best place.
As you said, he left us with a lot of souvenirs. My souvenir of him is me standing next to him looking like a dwarf when I took a photo with him in Washington, D.C. He was a great man. He was always mm-hmm. willing to, it didn't matter who you were, he stood by you and he took a photo with you.
That's true. You know, every single of us, you may think that you were taller. I remember the last time we met in Atlanta, we took a picture when it was home. I was with the president of our country because he invited us in Atlanta. And we had a dinner at his home. That was, I think, the last time we met together. And I just remember, you know, his huge smile with his raw voice. It's a sad moment, but, you know, that's part of life. We all of us have to face that and we have to get ready for it.
Abraham Luakabuaga is the National Secretary of the ruling UDPS in the Democratic Republic of Congo in charge of communication. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The United Nations Security Council heard Monday that rebels in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have consolidated control over the Rubaya coltan mining region, imposing a production tax estimated to generate around $300,000 in monthly revenue. Reuters news agency reports that the M23 movement, a Tutsi-led organization, purportedly backed by Rwanda, seized the area which produces minerals used in smartphones and computers following intense fighting in April. Bintou Keita, the head of the UN mission in Congo, told the Security Council that trade from minerals in the Rubaya area accounts for over 15% of global tantalum supply. Congo is the world's top producer of tantalum, which is considered a critical mineral by the United States and the European Union. In the U.S. election, Vice Presidential candidates J.D. Vance and Tim Walz meet today, Tuesday, for their first and only debate. VOA correspondent Cass Stearns looks at what to expect when the candidates meet in New York.
Go back to San Francisco.
No one's there.
Tim Walz and J.D. Vance will debate on television for 90 minutes Tuesday with two moderators and no live audience. Vance is a U.S. senator from the Midwest state of Ohio who's running with Donald Trump. He says the debate is a chance to show how Republicans will improve the economy and secure the border.
It's an opportunity for me to get to tell the American people how I think we can make their lives better and how Donald Trump's policies can make them more prosperous, can make the world more peaceful, and can secure that southern border. If we do those things, we're going to win.
Walz is governor of the Midwest state of Minnesota and is running with Kamala Harris. He says Democrats are looking out for working-class Americans, unlike his opponent.
Like all regular people I grew up with in the heartland, J.D. studied at Yale, had his career funded by Silicon Valley billionaires, and then wrote a bestseller trashing that community. Come on! That's not what middle America is. And I gotta tell you, I can't wait to debate the guy.
Vance is a one-time Trump critic who won the former president's endorsement for his Senate run. Vance has since aligned himself with Trump's America First approach.
Now, our enemies and a lot of Democrats call us populists, like it's something of an insult. But if being a populist means being on the side of working people rather than the powerful elites who hollowed out our middle class and sent us into stupid foreign wars, then sign me up.
Vance recently told European leaders they need to pay more to help Ukraine fight off the Russian invasion. Walz says Vance and Trump mean to relinquish U.S. leadership.
When Republicans used to talk about freedom, many of them actually meant it. They weren't going to turn their backs on our allies. They weren't going to leave Ukraine to themselves.
Vance says Harris is hurting working Americans in favor of illegal immigrants.
What Kamala Harris seems to want to do is to give all the benefits of American citizenship to people who shouldn't even be here, and that's going to bankrupt this country and make it impossible for normal people to afford to buy a home, to afford to buy groceries, to benefit from that social safety net.
Walz says Trump's career in business and in politics shows he's only looking out for rich people like him.
Rig the economy for those at the top and screw the people at the bottom. That's what they do. Your costs go up, They repeal the Affordable Care Act and bring us back to pre-existing conditions. They cut Social Security and Medicare, the very things that keeps my mom out of poverty.
Tuesday's matchup is the last scheduled debate before the November 5th election, with early voting already underway in some states. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And that's it for this Tuesday, October 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.